The Voice of America.
Our argument is that these individual governments should put pressure on those that are fighting to halt violations.
And in today's show, an Iraqi-led coalition fighting the Islamic State group says it's steadily pushing the militants out of a key Iraqi city. Aid groups say the suffering of war-weary Syrians has increased despite the passage of UN resolutions, and Nigerian sources tell VOA that foreigners are helping the Nigerian government to fight Boko Haram militants. I'm Michael Lippin. Iraqi government forces and their Shiite militia allies are tightening their grip on the city of Tikrit as they try to end its occupation by Islamic State militants. Militant gunfire and bombs have slowed the progress of the anti-Islamic State coalition, which has been pushing toward the center of Tikrit from two directions this week. Coalition commanders said Thursday the operation is advancing gradually and deliberately. The leader of one of the largest Shiite militias in the alliance said late Wednesday that the Islamic State fighters in Tikrit have two choices, surrender or death. VOA sources in Somalia say an apparent U.S. drone strike has killed a top member of the Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab. Somali officials and individuals close to Al-Shabaab told the VOA Somali service that Thursday's drone strike hit a vehicle near the southwestern town of Bardhere. They said the targeted car belonged to Adan Garar, a senior militant in Al-Shabaab's security branch known as the Amniyat. There was no immediate confirmation from U.S. officials of Washington's involvement in the drone attack or that Garar had in fact been killed. A group of global aid agencies says the 12 million Syrians who are stuck in the middle of Syria's brutal civil war have seen their living conditions worsen in the past year, despite two UN Security Council resolutions promising help. In a report released Thursday, the aid agencies say the council measures aimed at protecting Syrians from violence and encouraging a political settlement of the conflict have been ignored. The agencies also accused some of the most powerful voices in the UN, the United States and Russia, of undermining the very resolutions they supported by providing weapons to Syria's warring factions. Daniel Gorovin with Oxfam International told VOA that those weapon supplies should stop.
Our argument is that these individual governments should put pressure on those that are fighting to halt violations, to stop the bomb attacks, the killings, to allow humanitarian access so that the people that are in need can receive life-saving assistance.
Well, as the fighting in Syria enters its fifth year, more than 220,000 people have been killed, and almost half of all Syrians have been forced to flee their homes. A Nigerian government source says foreigners from Britain, South Africa, and Ukraine are present in northeastern Nigeria to train government soldiers battling the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. Speaking on condition of anonymity, the source told VOA that the foreigners arrived with military equipment purchased by the Nigerian government. On Thursday, soldiers in northern Nigeria also told VOA that many of the foreigners are actually taking part in the fighting, not just training. Chris Stein has more from the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
In an interview with VOA on Wednesday, President Goodluck Jonathan said it was necessary for foreign trainers to go to the northeast because there wasn't time to train Nigerian troops before the offensive started.
We buy some of this equipment. And ordinarily, when you buy new equipment, you have a time that you train your local people so that they will be very, very conversant with it. And we don't have that luxury because of the excesses of Boko Haram.
The Nigerian government source said the trainers would depart in the next 2 to 3 weeks, but more may arrive as additional military equipment comes in. Spokesman for the British High Commission said he wasn't aware of any private citizens operating in the northeast, but said there were British soldiers assisting the Nigerian military. He declined to say where in the country they are. David Zunmeno, a senior research fellow at the South Africa-based Institute for Security Studies, says the fact that Nigeria ended up employing private contractors, even in a training capacity, shows the sensitivities of having foreign troops on Nigerian soil. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
Here in the U.S., two policemen were shot early Thursday in the Midwestern city of Ferguson, Missouri, hours after the city's police chief resigned in the aftermath of a U.S. Justice Department report accusing his department of racially biased policing. The shooting incident occurred as protesters gathered outside the Ferguson police station. One officer was shot in the shoulder and the other in the face. Both are expected to recover. U.S. authorities believe the shots came from a handgun fired about 120 meters away. U.S. police searched a house and three people were detained in connection with a shooting investigation. Authorities say no arrests have yet been made. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has spelled out the economic consequences of ignoring climate change. He spoke at a Washington forum on Thursday as the United States and other world powers prepare for a United Nations climate change conference in Paris later this year. VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins has the story.
Addressing skeptics of climate change, Secretary Kerry said gambling with the future of Earth when the outcome is known is beyond reckless and just plain immoral.
It is a risk that no one should take. We need to face reality. There is no planet B.
In a speech at the Atlantic Council's Global Energy Center, Kerry said the increasing frequency of extreme weather events such as widespread droughts, flooding, and hurricanes would lead to disruptions that will affect jobs.
We can expect disruptions to the global agricultural sector that will threaten job security for millions of farmers and undermine food security for millions of families.
Saying the solution is good energy policy, he encouraged global investment in renewable energy such as solar power and wind. It's an issue that world powers will discuss at the UN conference in December in a bid to adopt an international agreement that sets a framework for lower carbon emissions. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, the State Department.
Where in the world is Russian President Vladimir Putin? His spokesman dismissed speculation on Thursday that the Russian head of state is having health problems. Dmitry Peskov told local radio that the 62-year-old president is absolutely healthy. Peskov's comments came amid rampant speculation on Russian language internet and social media that Mr. Putin is either sick, has died, has been removed from power, or is caught in the middle of a fight between rival factions inside Russia's ruling apparatus. The Russian president has not been seen in public since he met with Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi in Moscow on March 5th. Well, that's it for International Edition on the Voice of America. We'll be back at 03:30 Universal Time for an expanded look at the latest world news. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Have a great weekend.
This is Business News on The Voice of America. I'm Jim Stevenson. Stocks on major markets rose Thursday as the dollar softened the most in a month against major currencies after a surprisingly weak U.S. data. The U.S. currency retraced its gains after earlier hitting a 12-year high versus the euro, pressured by a third straight decline in monthly U.S. retail sales. However, the data was not weak enough to alter a recent shift in views that the Federal Reserve is getting closer to raising rates. Oil futures fell as estimates showed another big supply build at the delivery point for U.S. crude contract. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 259 points, or 1.47%, to close at 17,895. The S&P 500 gaining more than 25 points. It's now at 2065. And the NASDAQ Composite added 43 points, just under a percent gain, to close at 4,893. U.S. retail sales in February fell as auto purchases dropped by the most in a year and Americans spent less at restaurants and home improvement stores. Retail sales fell 0.6% last month after a 0.8% decline in January, according to the Commerce Department Thursday. That's the third straight retreat. Excluding the volatile categories of automobiles, gas, building materials, and restaurants, sales were flat. Freezing temperatures and snowstorms likely weighed on sales in February as the bad weather kept Americans at home. In December and January, steep drops in gas prices dragged down sales. Gas station sales rose last month, though, for the first time since May. And the number of people seeking U.S. unemployment benefits fell sharply last week, a sign that strong hiring will likely continue. Business News on the Voice of America. It's been a busy 9 years for a couple from Michigan. You know, some people try to visit each of the 50 states here in the United States. This couple completed a quest to visit all 3,108 counties in the lower 48 states. Jennifer and Jonathan Reel of Hancock, Michigan have done it in the same vehicle, a green 1999 Dodge Intrepid with more than 540,000 miles. Their next goal, they're going to Alaska and Hawaii.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Hacking has been in the news quite a bit of late. There is the hacking of the Sony Corporation. Also in September, information networks of two U.S. government agencies were attacked by hackers based abroad, but officials did not report the incidents until late October. VOA's George Putich is in the cafe with more.
Hackers are constantly probing U.S. government agencies trying to find out what sort of data is accessible. The White House and more recently the State Department have also reported attacks on unclassified parts of their systems that were quickly contained. But the incidents point to the vulnerability of the government's vital networks. Finding out whether the government is doing enough to protect its networks is as hard as finding out who is behind these and other similar attacks, says LaSalle University Adjunct Professor of Information Security Dean Henry. The Philadelphia cybersecurity consultant says vulnerability opens when people forget what he calls basic cybersecurity hygiene.
Not only in the federal government, but in general, people are tending to enable these attacks by clicking on links or visiting websites that have malware attached to them, and thereby opening a door for an attacker.
Henry says U.S. internet security also suffers from a shortage of cybersecurity experts.
I think the root cause of the shortage may be lying with undergraduate education and also basically schools where the STEM skills, science, technology, engineering, and math skills aren't being taught in volume enough, or students aren't being attracted to them enough to feed that pipeline.
Henry says fighting cyber attacks is a never-ending battle, and everybody must be aware of those threats.
It's not just the federal government or corporate America. It really gets down to individuals and doing really basic things, as basic as changing passwords, using difficult passwords, not having passwords the same on different sites. It's basic security awareness and training for everyone.
He says the best protection from cyber attacks are long, complex, and frequently changed passwords. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
A new study using laboratory mice points to the mechanism behind a leading cause of blindness. Health reporter Art Chaim says the research also points to a possible treatment.
The World Health Organization has listed glaucoma as the second leading cause of blindness behind cataracts. Drugs and surgery can sometimes help, but better treatments could make a difference. In glaucoma, a buildup of pressure in the eye can lead to damage to the optic nerve and loss of sight. Dr. Susan Quaggin of Northwestern University in Chicago explains that the eye is full of fluid and is making new fluid all the time.
And you can imagine when you're making this fluid, it's just as important that you have a proper drainage system so the fluid can escape. And if there's a problem with this drainage system, the fluid will build up, and this results in increased pressure.
Quaggin and her colleagues identified a specific chemical signal or pathway in the body that's essential for a healthy drainage system to develop. Mice that were genetically modified to block that chemical signal quickly showed signs of glaucoma.
Without this pathway, the drainage system doesn't develop, the pressure builds up, and glaucoma develops.
Quaggin says her lab now is a target for a medicine that might help.
Ultimately, what we're trying to do is to develop an eye drop, a simple eye drop that we could give to patients that will actually activate this pathway. So giving back the building blocks for these drainage vessels in the eye to improve drainage and to reduce pressure and to prevent blindness.
This is Art Chimes reporting.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. This is your invitation to join us daily at voanews.com, where we welcome your comments and your story suggestions.
everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. A new telling of the Cinderella fairy tale opens in U.S. theaters this week, with Lily James of Downton Abbey and Richard Madden of Game of Thrones in the leads. This film takes a slightly different look at Cinderella than the previous Disney animated version. In this film, Ella, later known as Cinderella, is guided by one of the last things her late mother says to her, to always be kind. Director Kenneth Branagh says he was surprised to be asked to direct this live-action version of the classic fairy tale.
Well, it seemed to me particularly surprising that it should land on my desk. A fairy tale, maybe, but I expected it might be Pinocchio or Rumpelstiltskin, which is a favorite of mine. And it turned out to be Cinderella, so I thought it was most unlikely and therefore very, very attractive.
To prepare for her role, Branagh had Lily James read Mohandas Gandhi's works and other books on spiritual journeys so she could see the power of nonviolent resistance.
But ultimately, I think what I was excited about and thought was sort of quietly revolutionary, at least in my view, for the story, would be the transformation of her character inside this tale.
The story keeps pretty much to the classic fairy tale. Cinderella's mother dies when she is young, and her widowed father remarries. But her stepmother, played in this new version by Oscar winner Cate Blanchett, has no love for her new stepdaughter. Blanchett says that the stepmother Lady Tremaine and her two daughters, Anastasia and Drizella, are the cruel counterpoints to Cinderella's gentle spirit.
And I think there's a lot of that her hardship has resulted in her calcifying and becoming very bitter and vengeful and jealous and self-serving. And they're all things that are not admirable. Whereas Cinderella has dealt with her hardship, the grief, her loss at such an early age, with becoming a real empath. And I think that that's what the story says, is maybe try that route. In this cutthroat world, maybe kindness is a superpower.
Richard Madden, widely known as Robb Stark on HBO's Game of Thrones, plays the prince. Branagh kept his two lead actors apart as much as possible during pre-production, so their first real meeting would be on camera, the same as Ella and Kit.
Where do you live, Mr. Kit?
At the palace. Well, my father's teaching me his trade.
You're an apprentice?
Of a sort.
That's very fine. Do they treat you well?
Better than I deserve, most likely. And you?
They treat me as well as they're able.
I'm sorry.
Richard Madden says this film goes against the old stereotype of the prince rescuing Cinderella.
The old-fashioned view of the damsel in distress and the knight in shining armor riding in and saving the day is old-fashioned. I don't think it's relevant anymore. And in this version, that's not what we're dealing with. It's not a girl that's waiting for a man to come and save the day. It's very much about a woman with her own issues and a man with his.
Lily James says that her Cinderella is a woman who does not need rescuing, and she strove to portray the character that way.
And one of my favorite moments in the film is when she goes downstairs right at the end and you know, the narration is, this is the greatest risk we'll ever take to be seen as we truly are. And she says, you know, this is me, this is who I am, and if you can love me, then I love you, you know, and that even at the end, it's not him rescuing her, she's making the choice. And I feel like that makes her an empowered, positive character.
For the pivotal dancing scene, production designer Dante Ferretti created a ballroom that had 5,000 hand-lit oil candles and 17 custom-made chandeliers. Costume designer Sandy Powell had Cinderella's dress include 10,000 Swarovski crystals and more than 270 yards of fabric. Cinderella is produced and distributed by Disney Pictures Studios. It also stars veteran actors Helena Bonham Carter as the fairy godmother and Derek Jacobi as the king. Cinderella is rated PG for mild thematic elements. So, do you plan to see this new version? Let us know and your thoughts on Cinderella's story by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And you can email your questions or comments to voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
Caught on camera this week, two men, one armed with a gun, mugging a South African journalist in Johannesburg as he prepared for a live television report. The incident is just one of scores of often violent crimes recorded every day in Africa's most advanced economy. It earns it a place among the most violent countries in the world outside of a war zone. The reporter lost his cell phone in the mugging, but he did get a lot of viewers. The video went online, and of course, it went viral. It's time for sports on the Voice of America. I'm Jim Stevenson. The first round of golf at the Shawnee Open has concluded with two players sharing the early lead. Mark Tompkins is at the Pretoria Country Club with details from South Africa.
We've reached the end of day one here in Pretoria, and joint leaders at the top of the leaderboard, Morten Oren Madsen, the Dane, and Englishman David Horsey, after both shooting rounds of 63 earlier on today. The highlight for Madsen was a hole-in-one on the par 3 eighth and an eagle on the par 5 ninth to finish, having started on the back nine.
Actually, the last couple of weeks I've been hitting some shots that were really close, and I felt like I actually said to my caddy last week that I think that's a hole-in-one is on the cards pretty soon. And luckily for me, it came today. I was hit a fantastic shot, great shot. I couldn't hit it better, and it just spun back in the hole. That was fantastic.
And the player that really threatened in the afternoon was Brett Rumford, who finished on 6 under par 64 alongside Vali Kotsia, who had such a good tournament in Johannesburg a couple of weeks ago. And then Raphael Jacquelin, the Frenchman, heads up a group of players on 5 under par after a round of 65 this morning. Last week's winner, Trevor Fisher Jr., is in touch. He's at 4 under after a round of 66. But it's Morten Oren Madsen and David Horsey that lead the way. They'll take a one-shot lead into round two.
Mark Tompkins reporting. After a 14-year absence, Serena Williams will make her return to the BNP Paribas Open tennis tournament in Indian Wells, California. The last time she played, the event was in 2001, and she was subjected to racist taunts.
Well, it was just a really good opportunity for me. I just felt like it was time. There's not one thing that says I should come back. I should come back in 2015. I didn't even know I'd be playing in this year. But it was more or less just timing. I just kind of felt it. I just felt like everything was a right time for me to just come back and try to do the best that I could here again.
Those taunts followed the semifinal when she received a walkover against her sister Venus Williams, who was injured. Serena, though, refused to return after the event, and she says she has learned to overcome the comments.
I was taught when I was young to always forgive and to always, you know, try to look at the bigger picture, so to say. So with that being said, I think it's been a good opportunity not only for me to be here, but also like I was able to raise awareness and for charities like EJI and the Equal Justice Initiative, and just, you know, pointing out different things that you can be better, you can overcome things, even though they might not be the best of situations. It depends on how you look at it and how you can overcome them.
Serena did go on to win in 2001. That's sports on VOA.
Hi, I'm Ray McDonald on The Voice of America, and this is the Top 5 Countdown. We're taking flight with the 5 most popular songs in the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart for the week ending March 14th, 2015. Our one new song per week policy is humming along nicely. Hozier leaves the top 5, while Rihanna, Kanye West, and Paul McCartney return to contention with 4 or 5 seconds. Rihanna and Kanye are all over the news this week. Hold on for more.
Now I'm 4 or 5 seconds from wildin', and we got 3 more days till Friday. I'm just trying to make it back home by Monday.
Rihanna, Kanye West, and Paul McCartney rebound a slot to 5th place with 4 or 5 seconds. They have risen as far as 4th place. For the 3rd year in a row, Rihanna is the most popular female act on the streaming service Spotify. As for Kanye, he just finished a 4-show residency in Paris as part of Paris Fashion Week. Both Kanye and Rihanna have albums on the way. He's executive producing her set, and a joint tour is rumored to be in the works. It's a down week for Ellie Goulding as Love Me Like You Do weakens a slot in 4th place. Ellie hits the road every day. She's a fitness fanatic. I'll have details after the song.
Love me like you do.
Golding takes a step back to fourth place with Love Me Like You Do from the 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack. Ellie's been a fitness fan for years and especially enjoys running. She's done 5 half marathons and is a spokesperson for Nike. Taking over third place is Maroon 5, who go the remix route for their latest hit, Sugar. Details are coming up. Maroon 5 moves up a slot to third place with Sugar. A new remix features Nicki Minaj. This isn't the first time Maroon 5 has enlisted rappers to sweeten up their songs. Big Sean handled the remix of Maps, while Animals featured 2 remixes, one with J. Cole and the other with Big Boy. Holding steady in second place is Ed Sheeran with Thinking Out Loud. Ed recently shared a fan letter and, well, you could say something was lost in translation. I'll explain after the song.
Take me into your loving arms. Kiss me under the light of 1,000 stars. Place your head on my beating heart. I'm thinking now.
Ed Sheeran remains stuck in the runner-up slot with Thinking Out Loud. This week, Ed went on Instagram to share a letter from a fan in South Korea. It said, "You are a little ugly, but I love you." Ed captioned it, "God bless Korea." Holding the Hot 100 title for a 9th big week are Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars with Uptown Funk. It's also the champ in the UK, and that puts it in pretty special company. I'll have more after the song.
Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girl, set you hallelujah. Girl, set you hallelujah. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Saturday night and we in the spot. Don't believe me, just watch.
Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars are your Hot 100 champs for a 9th week with Uptown Funk. It's one of only 4 singles to top both the U.S. and U.K. charts for more than 7 weeks. Mark and Bruno follow in the footsteps of Bryan Adams' Everything I Do It For You, Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You, and Rihanna's Umbrella. That's going to do it for now, but a new lineup awaits you next week. Thanks for dropping by today. I'm Ray McDonald, and this has been the Top 5 Countdown on The Voice of America.
If you followed the news even just a tiny bit over the last few months, you probably heard that it's been pretty cold here in many parts of the United States, especially up north in Massachusetts, where right now parts of Cape Cod look a little bit like the Arctic Circle. Now, icebergs are not a common sight in Massachusetts. However, massive chunks of ice have washed up on some of the beaches there, and they're drawing curious onlookers. Children have been climbing some of the icy mammoths that cropped up along Duck Harbor Beach in Wellfleet. And despite a brief warm-up earlier this week, there were still quite a few big chunks up to 2 meters high on some of the beaches Thursday. Meteorologists say, though, they're just fragments from the extraordinary amount of ice that built up in Massachusetts Bay. They were carried by currents into Cape Cod Bay and then Cape Cod Canal, and, well, you kind of get the idea. They drifted. A startling reminder of an epic winter that held much of New England in an icy grip for weeks. Still, it's amazing they're like mini icebergs, according to Jessica Horning, 33, who drove all the way from Connecticut with her 3 young children just to check out the unusual sights. She said it would be awesome if there were a polar bear on one of them. I don't know about that, but at least they got some good pictures out there on the beach. It's time for us to check out what's going on outside our doors in Studio 22. Our time is up. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Dave Magnus, and our managing editor is Diane Gao. We hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we'll join you right back here Monday with another edition of VOA Global.